Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Nun Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Even though we are presenting Shurim in the context of the Daf Yomi, it was necessary during our previous shiur, the shiur of Daf Nun He, to spill over, so to speak, to complete the train of thought, and that led us to concluding in the middle of Daf Nun Vav. You will notice that there is a marked word Gufa with a box around it, about halfway down the page, last word on the line. So we'll be picking up from that expression, gufa. Gufa is an expression indicating a quote of something that had been mentioned earlier. Before getting into the Gemara itself, though, let us take advantage of the nosei, the topic heading, that you will find in the outside margin in the Shas Ozir, which is the Shas that appears on your screen and is also the cornerstone of Gemara markings. We provide topic headings and structural notes from time to time, as needed. Topic headings referred to as nosei, and structural notes referred to as mivneh. In this case, under our nosei, we have featured a couple of points. The first is dinoi shel Rabbi Yochanan, the teaching, the law of Rabbi Yochanan, that states, lokach asora ubrin b'mei imon, kulon nichnosim ledir l'saser. If a person purchased 10 as yet unborn first offspring of animals, they will be subject to Meiser Behema. Klomar, Ein Alehem Ptur Lokuach. Even though we saw in the Mishnah that something that's purchased is exempt from Meiser Behema, nevertheless, that's, as we said in our last year, if they were purchased at a point in time that you could have done Meiser Behema. However, something as yet unborn isn't subject to Meiser Behema. Therefore, the exemption of Lekuach doesn't exist. Therefore, they're obligated. And we will get into this a little bit more. Under the second point here is Mosai Amrinan de Lekuach Potter. We're going to focus in more on this issue of under what circumstances do we say that Lekuach is in fact exempt. Now the Gemara. Gufa. Omar of Asi, Omar of Yochanan. Lokach asor ubrin b'mei imon. A person purchased 10 fetuses within their respective mothers. Kulon nichnosim ledir l'saser. When they're born, so the one who purchased them will count them toward Meiser Behema. They enter the corral for counting. The whole anan tnan, but haven't we learned halakuch o shenitan lo b'matana poter min ha-meiser, min meiser behema? This is similar to what we discussed at the end of our previous year. Here the Gemara goes over it. The Mishnah had taught that which you purchase or receive as a gift is exempt from meiser behema. So how can Rabbi Yochanan say that in the case of a purchase there is an obligation of tithing? Omar Rebbe Lozer. So Rebbe Lozer tells us the following. He says, Rabbi Yochanan chazoi b'chilma. I had a dream in which I saw Rabbi Yochanan. And that's a sign that milsa ma'al yo'amina, that which I am about to say must be worthy, must be worthwhile. And now Rabbi Lozer explains, Omar kra ta'aseh. The posuk that tells us about Meiser Behema uses the word ta'aseh, which is to do, to make. B'shas asiya. Miet Hakosuv. When the Torah exempts purchased animals from Meiser Behema, it's only if it's an animal that could be subjected to counting. So if you have an animal that could be subjected to counting, but you happen to purchase it, so that's exempt. However, an embryo is not subject to counting. Therefore, if at that stage I purchased it, well, when it's born, it will be chayef, it will be obligated to undergo ma'aser behema. Eisvei Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim l'Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Shimon raises a question from a source, and it says halokuach. The word halokuach means the exemption of a purchase chal al mechusar zman. The exemption extends to an animal before it's 8 days of age. In other words, I can't bring a sacrifice, and a ma'aser behema is an example of a sacrifice, but I cannot bring an animal as a sacrifice until it reaches 8 days of age. If I bought an animal, let's say, at 5 days of age, so that's a lokuach, that's mechusar zman. I can't bring it at that point as a sacrifice. Yet this source says that it's exempt from ma'aser behema. So we see, unlike that which Rabbi Elazar taught, Rabbi Elazar said that the exemption of lokuach applies only to the time at which an animal is subjected, subjected to tithing, here, tithing and, of course, being brought as a sacrifice, here we see that the exemption is not limited to Shas Asiyah, but even before Shas Asiyah, there is an exemption. Omale, Rabbi Elazar answers, Zu Eino Mishnah. The source that you are quoting is not a source that is reliable. The Im Tim Salomar Mishnah, if you insist that it's an accurate source, nevertheless, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda he. It's a singular opinion. It's an opinion of Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, and a few words are added here by the Shita Mekubetzis in the Ois Dalid. He adds, Desanya, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Mechusar Zman, Nichnas Ladir Lis Aser. Veharehu Kibachor. Reb Shimon says that even though something is yet not able to be brought because it's too young, nevertheless it can be subjected to the counting. True, it can't be brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice to be slaughtered and offered on the altar. Nevertheless, it can be counted and dedicated as a result of emerging as number 10, even though it's mechusar zman, it's premature. And this is derived from comparing it to Bechor, a firstborn. A firstborn male animal is also, it's given to a Kohen and eventually brought as a sacrifice. But at what point does it achieve its sanctity? As soon as it's born. Ma Bechor Kadosh Lifnei Zmano V'Korav Lachar Zmano. Just like a firstborn male animal achieves its sanctity prematurely, means prior to the time it can be brought, and eventually after it reaches its proper age, it's then brought as a sacrifice. Af mechusar zman kadosh lifnei zmano. So to something that's premature, meaning it hasn't reached 8 days of age, it can be sanctified. V'korev la'achar zmano, and then offered when it reaches that age. But after all is said and done, the halacha of ma'aser behema being chal on a mechusar zman, that is according to this particular opinion. But in general, Rabbi Elazar says, in explaining Rabbi Yochanan, that ma'aser behema, the exemption of ma'aser behema, let's say the exemption of lokuach, extends only to animals that could be brought. If you purchase an animal before a time that you could bring it, so it won't be exempted from ma'aser behema. There is an additional point that you will find in Rashi. Let's take a look at the Rashi that's about a third of the way up from the bottom of the Rashi commentary. The Im Tim Salomar Mishnah. if you insist that the source that Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim quoted is reliable, then Vadai Reb Shimon he. Day, according to him, man shas asiyahu, that even if it's lacking time, it's considered a time for a doing, for a making of it. And because of that, so the exemption of lokuach will apply. In other words, the fact that I can count it and makdish it and sanctify it as a result of its emerging as number 10 from the counting, that is called its shas asiya. And as a result of that, the source can tell you that lokuach, that if it's purchased, so if you purchase a 5-day-old animal, it's exempt from maiser behema, umihu. And this is the main point that Rashi brings out. B'mei imoi moida di'ein lokuach chal olav. Now, b'mei imo, even Reb Shimon ben Elozer will acknowledge, even Reb Shimon ben Yehuda will acknowledge that the exemption of lokuach won't extend to that, because it can't even walk through to be counted. It's still is as yet unborn. Therefore, the exemption of lokuach won't extend to it. And as a result of that, Rabbi Yochanan's halacha of one who purchases 10 as yet unborn firstborn animals, the fact that they are obligated in Maaser Behemah is something that all Tanoim will be able to agree with. The Gemara continues. Tani Tano Kamei Durav. Someone stated a Tanaic source in the presence of Rav as follows: Eizehu esnan shenichnas ladir lisaser. An esnan is a payment or gift given to a harlot for services rendered. In general, the Pasuk says, Lo sovi esnan zoino umechir kelev beis Hashem elokecha, that a person is not to bring as sacrifices things that were paid to a harlot for her services. This source introduces an angle, or I would call it maybe an exception. What is the case of esnan that enters the corral for counting toward Maiser Behema? Answer: Kol shenosnu lo v'chozar v'lokhoi heimeno. Anything, any animal that was given to her, and then subsequently bought back from her. Let's take a look at Rashi. V'chozar v'lokhoi mimeno. Let's say a person had 9 animals and plus this one. Chayovin b'meiser. They would have to be subjected to the counting in anticipation of a tithe. V'im yotza echod min aksherim b'asiri, harei tov. If one of the his own regular animals emerged as number 10, fine. V'im yotzo esnan basiri, and if the esnan, which is the gift given to a harlot, if that animal emerged as 10, after all, you can't bring that as a sacrifice. Nevertheless, there is sanctity that settles upon it. Ye'ochel b'mumo lebailim. You'll have to wait till it develops a blemish, and the owner will slaughter it on a personal basis and eat it. The Gemara now asks, if so, lay belokuach. But is it not exempt from meiser behema by the fact that he bought it back from her? It's a purchased animal. So this was Rav's question to the person stating the source. The Gemara comments, Ishtamitze ho diomar Rabbi Asi omar Rabbi Yochanan. Apparently, whoever was asking the question, maybe it wasn't necessarily Rav, but someone had asked this question, because Rashi says, doesn't identify him as Rav per se, Rashi says, Lahai Matshe. So the Matshe, the one who asked this question about, isn't it exempt, because it's Lakuach, apparently, Ishtamitze means it escaped him, he forgot that which Rav Asi teaches, the following, Lokach Asora Ubra Bimei Imon Kula Nichnosun Ledir Lisaser, that if a person purchased an unborn animal, we don't have to talk about first, that's a mistake, just simply an unborn animal, they all enter the deer for counting. So too over here, the case of the Esnan was, we were speaking about an animal that's as yet unborn, and as such, it is subject to Meiser Behemoth. It's important to note that the main point is that which we have written in between the lines, taken from the Rashi, that here too, in the case of Esnan, it's as Rabbi Yochanan taught, namely the case of the purchase of an as yet unborn animal. The Gemara asks, if that's the case, then the te'asra ihi. If the point of this source is to illustrate a case of an esnan that's being subject to meiser behema, why do you have to add that he then bought it back from her? Why doesn't she just do the tithing? The Rashi at the top of Omid Beis, of Nun Vav Omid Beis, says, Kevon de bimei imoi nos noi lo, since it was given to her as a gift for her services, when it was as yet unborn, lo mifsel mishum noisein bimatona. It doesn't become exempt from the need for tithing as a result of being received as a gift. And if this animal happens to emerge from the counting, and after it's born it emerges from the counting as the tenth animal, so it can be eaten when it gets a blemish. Why was it necessary for this source to teach that the fellow bought it back from her? I could have illustrated an example of an esnan that goes in to be counted even without his buying it back from her. She could have done the counting. The Gemara answers, Bezoino kusis. This source is talking about a Gentile or heathen harlot. So she doesn't do any of these mitzvahs. She's a kusis. She's a Gentile. The Gemara asks at the top line of Omid Beis, V'lukma bezono Yisraelis v'tesrihi, why not set up the source that she was that the harlot was a Jewish woman and she would do the tithing? The Gemara answers, Ha komash malon. By the fact that we set this source up and as referring to a Zayna Kusis, or let's to be a little more accurate, by the fact that the only way we can see that an esnan is being used or is being part of accounting toward Meiser Behema is when he bought it back, indicating or implying that she could not have done it because she was a kusis, we learn from this, the Zoino Yisraelis loy have esnan, that if a person conducts relations with a Jewish woman in the context of harlotry and pays her for it and gives her an animal for her services, it does not get the label of an esnan. And Rashi says that animal could actually be brought as a sacrifice. Kid Abaye, and this is in accordance with Abaye's teaching, Diomar Abaye, Zoino Kusis. We've underlined Zona Kusis. The next line, we've underlined Zona Yisraelis. A Zona Kusis, Esnena Osir, the animal given to her as payment, is unfit to be brought as a sacrifice. The Kayin Habo Oleha, Enoi Loike Mishum Lo Yechalel Zaro. And a Kohen that has relations with her does not receive lashings for the violation of Lo Yechalel Zar. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says he shall not desecrate his seed. The point is that when a Jewish man has relations with a Gentile woman, the offspring that would result from that are Gentile, and hence they're not related to him at all. It may have come physically from his seed, but they're considered Gentiles, and therefore it's not a violation of his seed anymore, because the Zaro, the children that result, are not associated with him. Therefore, he isn't violating, he isn't ruining, so to speak, his seed. It's not related to him at all. However, Zoino Yisraelis, Esnena Mutter, V'Kohen Habo Leo, Loike Mishu Lo Yechal El Zaroi. The Gemara is now going to go over these points. We already did... we already offered a partial explanation. You can see with our markings we've dashed, underlined these two cases, and now the Gemara elaborates. Zoino kusis esnena osur, the Gentile harlot, that which is given to her in payment, we say is forbidden to be brought as a korban. Gomar toyeva me'arayas, with a word comparison, we learn from Arayas, other forbidden relations. Ma Arayas de lo tafsibu kiddushi, just like Arayas is a reference to those kinds of women that a man's attempt at marrying wouldn't take hold. Example, a man with his mother, he can't marry his mother. There's no tfisas kedushin. Marriage doesn't take effect, doesn't take hold with a mother, with a sister, and with a few other relatives that are listed in the Torah. So just like you see the word to'eva in the parsha of Arayas, and what characterizes Arayas are relationships that cannot lead to a binding marriage. Af zoino b'hach delo tafsi bo kiddushi. So to the parsha in the Torah that deals with the zona, the same to'eva word appears. It has to be a woman, a harlot, with whom marriage could never be consummated. And that is true only with regard to a heathen woman. The Kohen Habo Oleo Eino Loke Mishum Lo Yechalel Zaro. That was the second point that was made with regard to the Zoino Kusis. Is that a Kohen that has relations with her, he is not in violation of this Pasuk of Lo Yechalel Zaro. The Lo Yechalel Zaroi Omar Rachmona. The Torah is warning against a Kohen ruining his own children, those children that are associated with him. V'hai Lav Zarehu. But a child born from a relationship with a heathen woman is not called his child, it's called her child. The child, it takes on the identity of a heathen. In contrast, you have a case of the Kohen having relations with a Zona Yisraelis. So, being that she is a Jewish woman, the child that's born is also Jewish like him. And since he's having relations with a Zona, that will create a child that's called a Cholol. A Kohen, or that or a child of a Kohen that's ruined, but it's considered his child, and hence it falls under the category of Zar Oi, which the Torah warns against being Mechalel, ruining. When we speak about ruining, we're talking about a Kohen, the child of a Kohen who loses the Kohen status. The child doesn't eat Truma, and he doesn't have all of the laws of Kahuna that apply to Kohanim applying to him. And that's a result of him becoming a Cholol. We approach a new Mishnah, and at the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading under the Nosei heading, Chiyuv and Ptur. We'll talk about obligations and exemptions regarding the topics of Meiser Behema and the second topic, Kalbon. Kalbon is a small coin that one adds when he brings his Machzis HaShekel. And we will speak about these mitzvahs in the context of Shutfim, partners, and Tfisis HaBayis. Tfisis HaBayis is a situation where heirs inherited an estate. Their father passed away, and prior to the division of that estate, it's called Tfisis HaBayis. We have a little note that we added to the inside margin. Lasim Lev. There's a little star. You can see what we're reading from right now. To Lasim Lev, pay attention. Shutfis Regila, a business partnership. Without getting into heirs, just two people that partner up. It could even be two brothers. After they divided an estate, they then repartnered. That's a partnership. A partnership is, number one, Ptura Mimaiser Behema. Based on Psukim in the Torah, we learn that Maiser Behema is a halacha that applies to a person that owns animals as an individual owner, not as a partnership. So there's an exemption of Maiser Behema when you're dealing with a partnership. And there's a chiyuv of Kalboin when partners give their Machzis HaShekel. That would be a case where a full shekel coin is given on the part of two partners, each one a Machzis HaShekel, together would be a full shekel. So the kalbon extra, an extra kalbon must be sent along with this full shekel coin. Now, Achin b'tfisis habayis, if you have a household that has not yet been divided, so you have brothers that inherit an estate, it's considered as if the father is still alive. Being that they haven't divided the estate, it's not considered a partnership, it's considered a single ownership. And therefore, chayovin b'maiser, they're chayav in maiser behema, and poter mikalbon. There is an exemption that is made here from the adding the additional kalbon. And for example, if a father gives the machzis hashekel on behalf of all of his children, he doesn't add the extra coin per chatzi shekel that he gives for each one of his kids. So there's no additional kalbon. Because there are multiple people, when you're dealing with a machzis hashekel paid from an estate that has not yet been divided. In the context of this shiur, we're not going to get into what the purpose of the kalbon was, but all we're mentioning is that when the machzis hashekel was collected, so if it was given by partners, partners gave it together in a full shekel coin, so each partner would have to add the kalbon. If a father is giving the machzis shekel on behalf of his children, there is no requirement of adding an additional kalbon per child. We now turn to the Mishnah. Ho'achin hashutfin shechayovin bekalbon. If they're in a state that there would be a kalbon obligation for each brother, that indicates that they have already divided the estate and then rejoined to become partners. Therefore, p'turin mimaiser behema. There would be an exemption for Ma'aser Behemah, as we pointed out earlier, that Ma'aser Behemah is a mitzvah, an obligation on an individual owner, not a joint ownership. V'shechayovin b'Ma'aser Behemah, if you have brothers that are together and we describe them as being obligated in Ma'aser Behemah, well, that's an indication that they haven't divided the estate yet. So they're shutfin, but not in the conventional sense. They're simply together because they haven't divided the estate. Therefore, we can say they're chayav in Ma'aser Behemah. Pturin min hakalbon. As a result of their having not divided the estate yet, they're all together as a single unit family. And there is an exemption of giving an additional kalbon per machzis hashekel that is being paid from this family unit. Konu mitfisas habayis. That means that they are still together. Konu doesn't mean acquired, but it means they own the property as a result of still being together in a pre-divided. They haven't as yet divided the estate. So we say chayovin. Chayovin in Ma'aser Behemah. V'im lav, if they are not in a state of tfisas habayis anymore, but rather they divided and then rejoined, pturin. And what the Mishnah does is it explains this word pturin as follows. Cholku, v'chozru, v'nishtatfu. They had divided and then rejoined. That makes them, that creates exemption from Ma'aser Behemah. Chayovin b'kalbon, upturin mi'Ma'aser Behemah. So in such a case where they had divided and rejoined, so they are chayev in kalbon, because since they had divided, they become separate individuals, and they're joining together. They're still considered two separate individuals that happen to join together. As a result of that, a separate kalbon must be added per machzis hashekel. However, they are exempt from Ma'aser Behemah because they are a formal partnership now. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source. You can see the frame section around these two lines indicating a Tanaic source. Yeh loch. That's the posuk. V'lo shel shutfis. From the word loch, it indicates private ownership. The pasuk that we're referring to is in Bamidbar, Perek Yudches, Pasuk Tesvov. You can see we have included it on the side of our Gemara, where it says, Kol peterechem l'chol basar asher yakrivu l'Hashem ba'adam uva'behema yeloch ach podoy siftes b'chor ha'adam. So in that pasuk you see yeloch, and we see that is to the exception of shutfis. Yochol afilu kanu b'tfis sabayis. Is there an exemption even in a case where the animals are part of an undivided estate? Talmud lomar yeh. No, there is no exemption. Yeh means that you shall, under all circumstances, practice Ma'aser Behemah. And so what we're saying is that if they have not as yet divided the estate, so it's considered a single ownership, and therefore there is a Ma'aser Behemah obligation. The Gemara asks, how can we use this pasuk for Ma'aser Behemah at all when it's in the context of Bechor, firstborn? V'hai b'Bechor k'siv. This pasuk is referring to firstborn, not Ma'aser Behemah. The Gemara answers him, Einu inyan lebechor. If it's not relevant to bechor, deha isay b'shutfis, dechtiv uvechoros b'karchem v'tzonchem. You can't talk about an exemption of firstborn when it comes to partnerships. The pasuk, when dealing with firstborns, it appears in the plural. It says uvechoros b'karchem, your bokar, in the plural, you in the plural. That means that Shutfim are obligated, if people own an animal, the Shutfis, and it happens to have a firstborn male offspring, it has Kedushas Bechor. So, this Pasuk that we're focusing on, Pasuk Tezvav in Perek Yudches, is featuring an exemption. So, Tenei Inyan LeMaiser Behema, we say it's referring to Maiser Behema. Amar Rav Yirmiyah, Rav Yirmiyah lists off four situations that the Gemara itself will explain each one. After the Gemara explains each one of them, the Gemara will raise a question indicating that it seems to be, whatever he says seems to be obvious. Why is his teaching necessary at all? So, marking-wise, we're labeling Rav Yirmiyah as a long point. You can see the nun that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line, showing us that all of these upcoming lines opposite this vertical dashed line are part of his point. So, Omar Rav Yirmiyah. Pe'omim shechayovin bozeh abozeh. Sometimes they are obligated in both kalbon and maiser behema. Upamim shepturin mizeh mizeh. Sometimes they're exempt from both. Pe'omim shechayovin bekalbon upturin mizeh behema. Upamim shechayovin bemaiser behema upturin min kalbon. And now we go over these points. What we saw in the Mishnah, we saw a case of with regard to one mitzvah there's chayev and the other mitzvah there's exemption. But Rabbi Yirmiyah elaborates and he says there are cases where there's a double exemption and sometimes a double obligation. Number one, chayovin bozeh bozeh. How can you have a situation where these brothers that also inherited an estate are obligated both in Maiser Behema and in the additional Kalbon? The answer to that is shecholku b'ksofim v'lo cholku b'behema. They divided the cash of the estate, and as a result of that, they are considered separate individuals, not a household, and hence, as such, they need to add a separate kalbon per machzis hashekel. For lo cholku b'behema, they didn't divide their animals yet, and as a result of that, it's still considered tfisas habayis. And as we saw earlier, when you have animals betfisas habayis, there is a meiser behema obligation. Hence, chayovin bozeh bozeh. Number two, pturin mizeh o mizeh. How do you have exemption from both the kalbon and the meiser behema? Shecholku b'behema. They divided their animals and then rejoined as partners. V'lo cholku b'ksofen. But they did not divide up the money at all. So, with regard to the money, it's still considered betfisas habayis, and hence there is no obligation of adding an additional kalbon per brother. As far as the behemoths are concerned, they're exempt from maaser behema because they divided up the animals and then rejoined as partners, and partnerships are exempt from maaser behema. Third case, chayovin bekalbon ufturim mimaaser behema. This, in truth, we saw in the Mishnah about chayav in one and exempt from the other. What happened? Shecholku bozeh obozeh. They divided both the cash and the animals and then rejoined. So, as a result of the becoming partners with regard to the cash, so they're chayav a separate kalbon per partner. As far as the animals, there's an exemption of maaser behema when you're dealing with partnerships. Number four, chayovin v'maiser behema upturin min hakalbon. How do you get to that? That there's a maiser obligation and an exemption from kalbon. Shelo cholku, lo bozeh v'lo bozeh. They didn't divide the cash. As a result of that, there is an exemption from the kalbon. And they didn't divide the animals. Hence, it's still considered a single ownership. And therefore, there's an obligation of Maiser Behema. The Gemara asks, Pshita, is this not all obvious? In other words, once you tell me the rules that like we stated earlier in our opening comment and opening note, then all of these scenarios are obvious. So what do I need Rav Yirmiyah to teach me these cases for? The Gemara answers, I need case 2. Cholku b'vehema v'lo cholku b'ksofim. If we look back at case 2, we saw that, and it resulted in being p'turin mizeh o mizeh. I need that case. It should be pointed out that in the case of Chok Behem of Chok B'Ksofim is actually a leniency in that it results in being exempt across the boards. And that has importance to be taught. That's its derichalei. You see, without Rav Yirmiyah spelling this out, I would have thought something else. Salka Daita Chamina. I would have thought otherwise. Kevon de Choku B'Vehema, since we're describing a case where they had divided their animals. These are brothers that started dividing the estate, and they divided the animals between them and then joined up. That created an exemption because they're viewed as partners. However, since they divided the animals, Golu Adatayo de la Miflag Kaimi, this reveals their intention of dividing everything, including the cash. Now, if they would divide the cash and then rejoin, they would be obligated a separate kalbon per partner. V'lechayvu bekalbon. So let us bind these brothers who have already divided the behemoths and not as yet divided the cash, but let's mechayev them in the kalbon. Kamash Malon, this is what Rabbi Yirmiyah tells me, that we don't place any emphasis on this golu adatayu, that they've revealed their intentions. We look at each category as it is right now. And hence, with the animals which they divided and rejoined their partners, and there's an exemption from Meiser Behema, and as far as the cash, they haven't divided it at all yet, so it's considered a single household unit. And in such a case, like if the father was alive, he wouldn't add an additional kalbon per child. Omar Rav Onan, loy shanu, the exemption of shutfis, of partnership from Maiser Behema, is taught, is qualified here, elo shecholku gedoyim keneged tyoshim, utyoshim keneged gedoyim. That's where the brothers who divided their estate, that one brother took goats and the other took sheep. Let's glance at the Rashi on this. Lo shanu dehavio shutfis lipotir maisebeimo ki chozu v'nishtatfu ela shecholku b'shuma, where they had made a division based on approximate values. Shuma means evaluation, that if one brother took the sheep and the other one took the goats, so they would have had to be subjected to an evaluation to determine that they are of equal value. Rashi continues, Gedoyim keneged Tyoshim, Tyoshim keneged Gedoyim, Lefi Shavyehen, the sheep-goat division would be according to their value. The Hosam Lekol LeMeimar Ze chelke hamagia b'misas aviem. Devarai b'shas misa zochabo b'chatzim v'im v'chatzim tyoshim. If it's a division like we just described, we would never say that the one brother took is that which was destined for him to receive, because at the point of their father's death, each brother was destined to receive half the goats and half the sheep, each one, half goats, half sheep. Therefore, if the division took place like we described, one taking all the sheep, the other taking all the goats, it is viewed as a type of purchase. There was an evaluation made, and in exchange for the value of the sheep, the other one took that value in terms of goats. So Rashi continues in his commentary and points out that the exemption in this case is an exemption of lokuach. Let us continue in the Rashi where we left off. We had on the second wide line in the middle, where we pointed out that at the Shas Misa Zochazeh v'chatzi Yigdoim v'chatzi Toshim v'zeh v'chatzi Yigdoim v'chatzi Toshim Hilkoch Hashto Kinyin Hu. Now that one is taking all of the sheep and the other brother is taking all of the goats, this is a transaction. Shezeh Kinyin Mizeh, that one is acquiring, the one who took all of the sheep was acquiring half of the sheep from his brother. V'avlodos Sheyeshnam b'shas chaluka pturin mimaiser behema. Those vlodos, the young animals that are there at the time of the division, are exempt mishum lokuach, based on the concept of purchase. The oisin wasidim lavo pturin mishum shutfus, and any animals that are born after this, after they had divided in this way and then rejoined, that would then come under the exemption of shutfus. So Rav Onan is saying that this whole exemption, the Ptur Shutfis, is when they divided like we described. Avol, he goes on in the Gemara, Avol Cholku Gedoyim Keneged Gedoyim Utyoshim Keneged Yoshim. If these two brothers simply divided the two types of animals down the middle, each one taking half the Gedoyim and the other one taking half the Tyoshim, Omer ze chelko hamagio misha rishona. I will say that is what he was supposed to get at the very beginning. This is called breira. Retroactively, this is what he was supposed to get from the very beginning. In other words, my taking half the sheep and half the goats is not a function of my having done this virtual transaction with my brother, where I sell him half the sheep in exchange for half of his half of the goats. But here, where each brother takes half the sheep and half the goats respectively, this is what we say was his portion from the very beginning. Retroactively, it becomes clear that this is what he was supposed to get from the outset. And in such a case, so then you don't have we don't have this exemption that we just described of lokuach and shutfis, but they're viewed simply as heirs. V'Rav Nachman Omar, afilu cholku gedoyim keneged gedoyim utyoshim keneged utyoshim, even if they divided each one 50% of goats, 50% of sheep, ein omrim zehu chelko hamagio misha arishona. We don't say that retroactively that which he got now was what he was destined to get from the very outset. And therefore, even in such a case, they are viewed as lekochos. And then when they rejoin, it's a shutfis. So at this point we have a machlokis Rav Onan and Rav Nachman in how you view brothers who divide the estate, in this case the animals, down the middle. Rav Onan will say they are viewed as heirs because of breira, and Rav Nachman says we view them as purchasers as a result of denying breira. Breira meaning retroactive determination. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to see two more opinions, Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yochanan. We've underlined their names, and this machlokas will parallel the machlokas Rav Onan and Rav Nachman. Rabbi Lozer Amar, lo shanu elo she cholku tisha keneged asara v'asara keneged tisha. This point of an exemption as a result of shutfis regarding these brothers that divided and rejoined that rejoining, forming a shutfus, will result in exemption only when one took 9 and the other took 10, and the other took 10 and the other one took 9. In other words, it's a division based on value and not based on pure division. Avochoku tisha keneged tisha, v'asor keneged asora. But if there were, whatever we have, let's say there were 18 sheep and 20 goats, and each one took 9 sheep and each one took 10 goats, in other words, that's a division down the middle. So Omer ze chelkoi hamagioi mishah rishona. Then we say, retroactively, this was what he was supposed to get at the very beginning. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, afilu choku tisha kegeneged tisha, ve'asora kegeneged asora, ein omer ze chelko hamagio misha rishona. And Rabbi Yochanan will say that even if it was an equal division, 9 for 9, 10 for 10, we don't say that this was his portion that he was supposed to get from the very outset, but rather it's a division based on evaluation. There's a Rashi at the bottom that points out what we explain. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Plukta, Rav Onan, Rav Nachman Pligi. The machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, which features, do you hold from Breira or not when you have an even distribution? This parallels the machlokes we saw above between Rav Onan and Rav Nachman. The Gemara at the top of Nun Zayin continues, V'ozga Rabbi Yochanan Tamei. Rabbi Yochanan here, who says Ein Breira, is consistent with what he has said elsewhere. The Omer of Asi, Omer of Yochanan, Ho'achen Shechoku, Lekuchos Hein, Umachzirin Ze Lozeh B'Yovel. Here, we're describing brothers that divide land. And he describes them as purchasers, and as a result of that, when the Yovel year comes, they rejoin and then go through a new distribution. And that's because they're viewed as purchasers, and the law concerning Yovel is that when the Jubilee year arrives, all lands that people purchased are returned to their original owners. Here we're talking about brothers that divided an estate. Since we're viewing them as purchasers, so the land is returned to its original status as being together, and then re-divided. So in effect, I've heard Rabbi Yochanan now on two occasions in describing brothers who divide, one case dividing animals, the other case dividing land, viewing them as lekuchos, as purchasers. And as such, we saw the different nafgaminas regarding Meiser Behema and regarding land and return thereof. The Gemara now points out, I need both of these teachings. I need Rabbi Yochanan to essentially repeat himself in these two cases. Utsrichi. De'i Ashminan Hocha, had we told you Rabbi Yochanan's point of view with regard to Meiser Behema, Beho kom Rabbi Yochanan, in Meiser Behema, I would have said that he's stating his position that there is no Breira, and as a result of that, there will be an exemption of Meiser Behema, because in the pasuk of Meiser Behema, there's a parallel to child, to firstborn child. In the case of Meiser Behema, he says that he speaks about this exemption because of Ein Breira. Ma Bincha Beboroloch, just like Bincha, when is there an obligation of Bincha? Well, Bincha is something that's clear that it's yours. He was born in your, the child was born as your child, in your rishus. Af shorcha v'tzoncha, so too the chiyuv of Meiser Behema, but borur loch. something that was clear to you from the outset. However, if it's not clear to you from the outset, so there will be an exemption. So we're saying that Meiser Behema is something that is clearly parallel to Bincha, because they're in the same pasuk. And when is there a chiyuv? Only when it was something that was boruloch, not a case of animals that you got through a division of an estate. Avol sode mecher hu diomrachmona lehader biyovel yerusha umatona lo. But in the case of fields, the Torah says, if I didn't hear Rabbi Yochanan comment in the realm of fields, I would have said, as far as fields are concerned, only purchased fields go back in the Yovel. But things that one got through inheritance or through gifts would not go back. Hence, I need Rabbi Yochanan to say that brothers that divided an inheritance of fields, those two go back. They're restored to the original state where they were together. So therefore, just to review this last point, by stating Rabbi Yochanan's position by Meiser Behema, I would have thought that his position of saying Ein Breiro and the result of that being an exemption from Meiser Behema, that's because Meiser Behema was parallel to Bincha, that when is there an obligation? Only things that were born in your domain, in your Rishus. However, I would not have known his position with regard to fields. Fields are not parallel to Bincha. And I would have thought that in the case of fields, since it's something that he got through inheritance, it would not go back. Only sales go back. Therefore, he had to state his position with regard to a field division by brothers as well. V'i ashminan sadeh. And had I heard Rabbi Yochanan's position with regard to Sadeh, namely that brothers who divide an estate, the fields are returned in the over year, because that's lichumra, that's a stringency, as opposed to his teaching by Meiser Behema, which resulted in a leniency, where Rabbi Yochanan said, even if they do an equal division, there is an exemption. So had I taught Rabbi Yochanan only in the context of the fields, brothers who divided an estate of fields, there he might have said what he says, only because it's a stringency. Inami lechatchila. As far as what that phrase means, Rashi explains that in the case of Yovel, there's a desire on the part of the Torah that things should be restored to the way they were once upon a time, to their early state. And hence they're returned. Avol hacha, but in the case of Meiser Behema, Eimo lo. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan would not have said what he did, and rather he would have adopted the position saying that which they, when they make an equal division, that's what they were always supposed to get. And hence, it wouldn't have a status of shutvis, and therefore, they would be obligated in Meiser Behema. Sricha, therefore, it's necessary for us to have Rabbi Yochanan state his case also by the Behemos. Meisvei, the Gemara now raises a kasha, a question, on the Man D'Omar that says Yesh Breiro, that there is retroactive determination, from the following source. This question is a long question. You can see we have a long question marking to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. It says V'chein ha-shutvin shechoku Echod notal asoro V'echod notal tisha V'kelev. Partners that divided their animals. One took 10 animals, and the other took 9 and a dog. Shekineged HaKelev Asurin. The 10 animals are forbidden to be brought as sacrifices. She'im HaKelev, the 9 that were together with the dog, Mutarin. Maybe a word of introduction before we go any further. We had seen earlier that there's something called an Esnan Zona, a gift given to a harlot. The Torah says, Lo Sovi Esnan Zona Mechir Kelev Beis Hashem Elokecha. A gift given to a harlot, if it's an animal, cannot be brought as a sacrifice. In the same pasuk, there's reference to Mechir Kelev. That is an animal that one got in exchange for a dog. In other words, if I sold or gave someone a dog in exchange for his sheep, the sheep that I got in exchange for the dog cannot be brought as a sacrifice. That's called Mechir Kelev. In this example that we just saw in the source, we had these partners dividing their holdings. One took 10 sheep, and the other took 9 sheep and a dog. So in this source, we're taught that the group of 10 were taken in exchange for the group of 9 and a dog. So that the group of 10 are being viewed as Mechir Kelev. It's almost as if to say that any one of those 10 animals was the one that was used, that was received in exchange for the dog. Now, the E Amris Yesh Breira, if you were to take the position that there is something called retroactive determination, so Livor Chag Minay Lebahadi Kelev Velishko V'Hanoch Lishteru, why not just choose one of those 10 animals and say, this is the animal that this partner took in exchange for his holding in the dog, so that he released his holding in the dog to the benefit of his friend. In exchange for that, he got his friend's holding in this sheep. So we'd have identified one sheep as being the one that was given in exchange for the dog, and the other 9 of those 10 sheep, the other 9 would be kosher as korbanos. And yet we don't seem to say that. We seem to say that all 10 animals are forbidden to be brought as a korban, seemingly indicating to us that there's no brera. We don't accept this idea of retroactive determination. The Gemara answers, Omer Avashi, I deshavu kulu lahadodi hochinami. If each animal in this division were of equal value, then I would be able to say what we just suggested. I would say brera. Because it would be, each animal would be equivalent in value. We have the each sheep equal, each of the 9 sheep equal to in value to each one sheep equal in value to each one of the sheep that the guy that took 10 had, and the dog is equal in value to one of those sheep. Then I would say, just pull out one of those 10 sheep and say, this is the one that was used in exchange for the dog. However, in the source that we read that said that all 10 sheep are forbidden, the lo shavu kulu lahadodi, they're not equal to one another. V'shovi hai kalbo chad umashehu. The problem here is that we have this dog together with the 9 sheep. That dog has the value of one of the sheep plus umashehu. So that if you were to compare the value of sheep for sheep, the 9 sheep versus the 10 sheep, each one of those 9 sheep is worth a bit less than any one of those 10 sheep that the other one took. So, and to compensate for that, there's this dog also that was thrown in together with the 9 sheep, the dog being worth a little bit more than any one of those 10 sheep. So that there is an equal division in terms of group values. However, sheep for sheep, or dog for sheep, there isn't an equal value. So that the dog is worth a little bit more than any one of those nine sheep that were together with it. That extra little bit, behind mashihu, moshich v'osi b'kulhu. That extra is, we'll say, distributed amongst each one of those ten sheep. And it's that which causes them, all ten, to be forbidden. Let us take a look at Rashi on this answer. Hocha b'mayaskinon, dekulu asiri. What is it talking about here that we say they're all forbidden? Delo shovu adodi. They're not equal in value, opposite the other. Shetisha kvosim shebesoch ho'asora, shovin yoiser mitisha shi'im oiso hakelev. In that group of ten sheep, so nine of them are worth more than the nine together with the dog. V'hakelev shove eso asiri, the oso mashu shishoven oisin tisha shekinegdon yoiser mitisha shimo, the dog is worth a little more than the tenth, and that extra amount is that which is divided amongst all ten, and that's what makes it into a mechir kelev, as Rashi says in his continuation of the case. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.